Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, and I am the host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have on with us again this morning Judy Pickens, a young woman who is serving a life sentence in prison for a crime she did not commit. And Judy, I was wondering if you could just let the audience know once again, just a brief story of what happened to you and when you went into prison and how long you've been in thus far.
Yes.
Let's welcome
Judy
Pickens.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry. Thank you, Ms. Leona, and to your listening audience, good morning. Again, my name is Judy Pickens, and as she so graciously reiterated, I have been incarcerated for more than 14 years for a crime I did not commit. I was brought up on charges for the death of my son, Michael Pickens, and it's kind of a long story, but the whole in a nutshell is that I was wrongfully accused and falsely imprisoned. My son became ill, and when he became ill, as any parent or family would do, we took him to the doctor, we being my husband and I, Carl Pickens. And his pediatrician thought it was just a flu bug. It wasn't just him. It was our daughter, Kimata, as well. And we took them to the doctor. They were seen and sent back home. They still did not get better. They would kind of go up and down, like kids do. Seems like they would do great in the daytime and then not so well at night. And so we did our due diligence, and we followed all the protocols that the doctor had instructed us to do. And bottom line is we kept taking them back. When they didn't seem to get better, we called the children's hospital nurse on call that they have that you can utilize when your kid after doctor's hours. And they gave us some little tips, and we tried that, and that didn't work. So they eventually said, perhaps you should bring them in because with them being young, we don't want them to, you know, get dehydrated. So we did that. We brought them in. They saw them, sent them back home. The next time we took him back in would be a few days later, or not quite a few days, maybe like a day and a half later. They kept them that time. My children just kept never getting really better. They would go up and down, and then there was a span where they would do okay. The long and short of it is my son, Michael, passed, and they could never keep a line in him. They kept pulling lines, drawing lines, and basically his veins just gave out. Very difficult to have to live through because you want to believe that wherever you take your children, they're going to be okay. You don't know these people and they don't know you, but you have faith in the system. And I think I've had faith in the system overall. I've had faith in the legal system. I've had faith in anything. I have never had a reason to challenge it because I guess I never really had a reason to depend on it. But at the end of the day, we had to deal with that hardship of listening to them tell us that although the machines are working for him, he himself wasn't really functioning. That was the hardest time of our lives. It just felt like the world stopped on a dime.
And I wanted to add, too, Judy has a daughter who she had also taken to the hospital, and that daughter is now Judy, in her early 20s, late teens?
She's 21.
21, and she was 5 years old when this occurred. Mm-hmm. And I would think that a five-year-old, if this was the case of negligence or purposely, trying to do something, that she would have been able to talk about it. Instead, you and your daughter seem to have an excellent rapport with one another, a relationship, mother and daughter. And that alone should say a lot about your family and, your relationship with your children. Also, you come from a Christian background. I think you mentioned last time, and for those that weren't listening in at the time, this is something maybe you might want to also let them know about.
Yes. Right now, at the time, I was an ordained and licensed minister. I am a pastor. I am a youth group leader, ran the youth ministry for many, many, many years. countless children, hundreds of children, set up under Bishop Ewell B. Brandon at Trinity Full Gospel Church, who oversaw all of our activities and more or less was my mentor and spearheaded my the ministry and the career in the ministry that God had called me to. I am a wife of 20-plus years, a mother of three, one passed on, as you all know. I have an excellent relationship with my husband, who we have been just co-parenting, even as your children, even though they become adults, are still your children. So we still co-parent, even though I'm in here. We problem solve together. And we do what we have to do as parents. I have been and was an active member and is of the NAACP organization, as well as have served as president on two different occasions, vice president on two different occasions, chair of committees for Chapter 44AB on multiple occasions. I have helped to spearhead and create a tutorship program within the prison itself with the NAACP, have taken on helping women to acquire their GED along with other employable skills. And in doing so, there have been many women that have come in and out of this prison since I have been here. And they have learned how to read, write. Many of them have gone on to get their GED. Some haven't. There's always going to be that variable. I also started a mentorship program called Sister to Sisterhood, helping women to see the worth in themselves and to strive beyond the gate. That was the whole mission goal, using the metaphor of a butterfly, understanding that we all go through transition and change. And just have done countless other things. An accountant on the street, worked as far early, my first actual paying job, you know, was cutting grass as a kid, about 8 or 9 years old. And I have never not worked. I've always worked and had an employable job working in the accounting field, and worked for Aramore Corporation as the chief financial officer at the Charles F. Knight Center at Washington University, where we interacted with Ivy Leagues on a regular basis. So I come from a background where this is just inconceivable. And anyone that knows me would know that I have 17 godchildren who are still very much in contact with me, who email me and visit or write on a regular basis, who are just devastated. See, when this happened to me, it didn't just happen to me. It happened to our community. It happened to so many other families that were networked and connected into us, because my husband and I, we just took people into our hearts. We took people into our homes. Maybe not always the wisest move, but we did that. So we have such an extended family that I can't even count them all, because then they have children who have children. So we have been asked to be godparents over countless children that we love and take and hold very dear. And so this is a ripple effect. It has affected so many, not to mention my mother and father. Being a parent of an adult child, I now understand what my mother used to say, they get off your lap and on your heart, because there is no way. You can't control what's happening to your adult children. You want to keep them in the bubble that they're in, protect them from everything, but you can't. And, you know, but it is what it is. And so we have worked very diligently at trying to right the wrong. We've worked with the ACLU. We've worked with we bring in social workers from off the streets. We work with women in transition. We have worked with countless programs to try to help people get acclimated back into the system. Also, using those same programs, I have tried networking through, my family and I have tried networking through all the different variables and obstacles to try and get the help that I need in getting my name cleared. As we said in the previous shows, we've gone through many different places and resources. You know, the system works very quickly to throw you in here on next to nothing, literally. And then they drag their feet to right their wrong. And I had to come to accept in my own mindset, and this could be wrong, but I had to come to accept that perhaps in looking at the legal system and the judicial system as it is, when they openly admit that they have erroneously done something, grossly been a judge of character, and falsely imprisoned someone, everything attached to that thing is now in question. And so rather than hold those individuals who we trust, who might have been appointed and some even elected into those positions, hold them accountable for their judicial misconduct, It is it is wrong in every sense. And we're looking at it in our press today. We're seeing our political officials and people who have what we consider to be trustworthy professions being brought up and held accountable. But it hasn't happened enough because it is happening continuously to our the genocide that's happening to our young black men. When I look in this prison and see all the women that's in here and the percentage of women who are in here because they didn't have a good attorney or they have been wrongfully accused, so many from domestic abuse and on, it is insane. I think of the case of Eleanor Wiesenhofer when she was in prison and how they had accused her of harming her children and how the churches got behind her and eventually she would be that would be changed and rectified and she would be cleared of the charges and now is in the law field herself. It doesn't happen enough. There are countless stories of where they have falsely accused and wrongfully imprisoned both male and female. It just seems like, from my vantage point, that they move quickly for the men and not so quickly for the women. And so here we are kicking against this wall that we have a law library, but it's so very limited, and we are so very restricted. And at any given time, they close the library, which happens more than not. You have to beg, plead, and grovel just to try to sift through limited information that is so very difficult to comprehend because of how behind we are in the technology and the knowledge and the information, that you almost paddling against the waves here. And that's why it's so very important to have that support network out there. And I am just so thankful and grateful that I have my sister Brandy Somerville, who has been my my champion of champions.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I mean, my...
She keeps us on our feet.
Yes.
Oh,
she has
oh my God.
Who do we have on the line with us? Hello?
Brian. My name is Brian Taylor.
Oh,
Brian Taylor.
Judy, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Oh, that's one of my godsons.
Oh my God, I'm so glad to hear your voice.
Oh God.
Brian, would you like to say something on behalf of Judy?
I would like to say that she did not even mention half of the things that she has done and half of the person she is. The first day I met this lady, she paid my rent with no problem and put me up and made sure I had a place to live. And when I didn't have a place to live, she gave me a place to live in her house. This is a total miscarriage of justice. I don't know what's going on. I think maybe Judy is in a spot that she's actually got to shine and just in that place just for this moment. Judy, you're going to be set free, baby.
Now,
and I'm
going
to be right here waiting on you. I have been waiting to hear your voice so long.
Brian,
so,
could you just hold on for one second?
She is
we
such a wonderful woman. We call her Mama Judy at the church. She anything that dealt with youth at the church, she was over, and she was passionate, and she was a mother, and she still found time for other people's children.
And
Brian, I
don't
Brian
wants to
say
something,
Brian.
Brian, she
Brian,
wants to say
Judy
something.
Only has a half an hour with us, and so we
I'm
want
sorry,
to find
I'm
out.
I'm sorry. Judy, I love
no,
you so much. Please call me.
Okay.
We have
I
a
will.
Couple more callers. Who's on the call with us? Hello?
This is Carl. I'm here.
Okay, we have
I'm
Judy's husband on the phone with on the line with us as well. We have someone else on the line with us.
Hello. My name is Kimberly. Hi, my name is Kimberly Smith.
Oh.
Okay, Kimberly, do you have anything you would like to say on behalf of Judy?
Of course. I think that Judy has a masterful spirit. I think that she is not only of God, but you can feel God when she speaks to you. I think that her being there is because God put her there as a testimony to others that he doesn't fail you, that he will bring you out of any situation, that only man is the one who judges you and is in error when he does that because God is the only judge. I feel that her meeting me and talking to me has been a true blessing and testimony in my life. I feel that every time she speaks to someone, it's almost as if God has taken his hand and put them on you. I know that our system is set up to fail people of color, but I know that God will put people in office that will change this. I know that he will put people in places to realize that as a people, we need to stop what's going on. And with the elections coming up, we need to make sure that people are in office that will change this situation. The state of Missouri has a place where they keep people because they can't pay tickets, that they deprive people from the representation that they are entitled to in order for them not to be incarcerated. This is something that has been set up by government, and we need to change that. So Judy is a testimony because she will be set free, because we're going to change the narrative. We're going to change the way that politics are being ran and how it affects people of color, especially women. And we're going to help her in every aspect that we can. I live in Chicago, but I plan to be there in St. Louis to help and ensure that this does happen. So, Judy, I want you to know that I love you. I hope that everyone that is listening will come out and vote to change and put people in office that will change this, that will sign a petition to change the narrative. There are too many African-American and Latino women that are incarcerated for false imprisonment, and we need to change this. And the only way we do it is by letting people know that your voice does count. Your vote counts. People have tried.
My vote into any politician, I'd like to see what they would do first. This is the time maybe everyone should be calling the politicians that are running and see what they can do for Judy before you put your vote anywhere. And this is the problem.
Exactly.
We hear from the politicians when they want our votes, but when we need their help, they're not there. Just as the same way
and
with the NAACP, and I know a lot of people are involved with the NAACP, ACLU, these people are about money, and they're not about helping. So this is why we have to look at those that are actually doing something instead of just talking about it.
And that's the reason I say that when I say change the narrative, because I don't have to have a master's degree to sit in Congress, because
exactly.
I know what the struggle is of my own people. And that's why I say we have to change the narrative. Call the question on that alderman, on that state rep, on that Cook County Attorney General. Call the question on them, because if they can't answer that question publicly to people that they are willing to help, then that's not who you vote for. That's not who you vote for. You make
Absolutely.
Sure that in the public eye, you call that question. And you put people in office that are willing to change the narrative, that are willing to stand up, to sign a petition and say that they will stand with Judy, that they are going to help change this. That's exactly what my point is in saying that, because right now, this is an election year. Don't put anybody in office that's not willing to stand up and do what is right. There is no more hiding behind anything.
Absolutely. I first want to thank God for the overwhelming support. And I just want to kind of recap something here. You know, in the one of the many things that the Lord deals with me on, I was called even as a child in the prophetic. And so the Lord deals with me a great deal in the prophetic. And how I would come to know Ms. Smith, who God, it was nothing but God. I was sitting in my room on 3C Upper in Vandalia Prison, Women Eastern Correctional Facility, and the Lord dropped in my spirit, I'll never forget it, the name Kimberly Smith. I didn't know her from Adams to Steve. And so then as I began to, God began to give me a word for her, and as God began to give me the word for her, I said, I don't know this person. I called someone at home, and I said, look her up, find her, and get her this information. Give me her number. And I just took a dime. I went out on a limb and just believed God that if he said it and if he gave it, it would come to pass. And sure enough, we made connection. And the prophetic, the realness of it is so very real. God told me, he said, the gift will make room for you. I thought of it in a different perspective, not realizing that that's exactly what the Lord was beginning to do. He was beginning to show me it, glory to God. He was beginning to show me my release. And so I kept saying, God, how are you using me to help so many others in the secular world and in the spiritual world? And it didn't seem like help was coming my way. And I have to tell you that she has been just so very fruitful and so very helpful. And God said she was going to be in the political arena, and it's just so funny that she talked about that, because I could hear it in her voice. I know that that's something that she's going to be pursuing in the near future as well, and I just believe that God put us in each other's lives so that we can see what to do and what not to do. That's really what I think I could tell your listeners. We walk around and we go around in life just believing that it's just me, my four, and no more. All I have room for is what's in front of me. But this world needs us to look beyond the box. We have to. You've got to look out there and see your great, 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 great grandchildren, because the moves you make today will ultimately affect them. If we don't have a care about who we put in office, if we don't have a care about all the injustices being done in our society today, it will one day hit our children. I think I made that clear in my last time I was online on air, is that it can happen, and it will happen. We see it happening every single day. We cannot trust what is leaving our government systems out of their mouths, because it's about them being politically correct in front of the camera, but the deals that are made behind the door, the deals that are made up under the table, as in myself and so many others, like Reginald Clemens, like Bertha Owens, like Patty Pruitt, like Sandra Merritt and Ellen Bowen, all of these people.
Exactly.
There's so many of them that have been wronged by this system. These people have been down a lot longer than me. When I think of Ellen Bowen, my roommate, she has been down almost 30 years. That is insane to me, how a system that is meant to protect and serve the people can now ostracize them, isolate them, and in so many words, for lack of better words, kidnap them from their lives, make them almost seem like they do not exist. Misrepresentation of character is an understatement, because even when my name is cleared, because the Lord did tell me my name would be cleared, I would be exonerated, and my name would be cleared, the charges would be reversed. I'm here to tell you that I will still be facing people who, because once it's out there in cyberspace, it's out there. You will always on some level contend with having to justify and clarify. But I can't be any more clear when I tell you that my husband and I have been fervently pursuing clearing my name, and not just for me, not just for what has happened to us, but for so many others. This is not something that once I'm home, I'm going to ever forget. I will never, ever, ever, ever be the same. That was something my husband made me promise when we knew that this was a foregone conclusion. He said, when you go in there, I don't want you to let that place change you. And I said, oh, it won't. But it has changed me. I don't think it's changed me for the worse. I believe it has changed me in ways that it opened my eyes.
And Judy, this is what I wanted to say as well. Are you still on with us?
I am. I'm just hearing a lot of feedback.
You mentioned that God put you in a position, and I want to say in a more of a position than you think, because your story is being the voice of so many thousands and thousands of other women and men that have been wrongfully convicted. Mm-hmm. So God is using you to get be a voice for all prisoners who are going through the same thing.
That's right.
I also wanted to say, God is testing others out to see exactly what they're going to do to help in these situations when people have been wrongfully convicted or they have gone through some type of injustice. We have people in the world that think that prisoners are terrible, that may look at your situation in a negative way, but what they're not looking at is the fact that maybe God is testing them to see what they're going to do to help instead of judge without knowing all the facts. So these are some of the things. And your husband, as you were just mentioning, Judy's husband, Carl, in the last interview that we had mentioned, and this is what so many others go through, he went to work one morning with the family, and he came home without one. And this is a heartbreaking thing, because so many people, that one minute they're a loving couple, they're a happy family, and it can take a split second to have all of that destroyed. And so at some point in time, I'd like to have Carl back on with us as well. But again, Judy, go on and finish what you were saying. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this was important to me.
No, I think it's absolutely correct. We do. I think for me, it was an eye-opener in so many ways because, again, I was extremely biased where the criminal justice system was concerned. I thought that they were right and everybody else was wrong. I thought that if you were incarcerated, that the state had made their case and that it was right, it was correct, and that, you know, everybody that goes to prison is guilty. I actually, honest to God, believe that, sure, my name is Judy. I believe that it would not be until it happened to me
exactly.
that I could see what people had always told me. It wasn't that I wasn't made aware of it. I just chose not to believe it because I just thought, oh, they're just saying that. Until it happened, I watched my life unravel before my eyes, and I was powerless to do anything about it. When we knew that this was going to be something that, at first, we couldn't believe it, just pure shock, too busy grieving, too busy being a leader in the ministry. You can't even grieve appropriately because people are always looking for you to be the pillar of strength. And you have those unrealistic expectations of yourself. And even in our marriage, we did at some extent. We were afraid to, in the beginning, to even talk because talking about it made it real. Because you have to understand, my son passed in 2004. I was not even approached for conversation in 2006. So 2 years had passed. Now, let me say this to you, and I want to be very clear about this. Had this been something that they knew for a fact, or as we've heard in prison terms, I mean in legal terms, a smoking gun evidence type deal, no way where there is a child involved would they have ever dared to wait 2 years before they would even approach a family. This is how you know that this is just insanity. And the sad part about it is these individuals can go on with their lives as though it's okay. Now I understand that the sitting judge and the prosecutor that was over my particular situation, among so many others, as I would come to find out once I got here, who experienced those two people under the same kind of railroading, have been looked at and investigated. That causes a pause. There should be a pragmatic pause that says, wait a minute. If they're being brought under suspicion, if they are being investigated, there is a reason. Because for them to even be looked at suggests to me that there have been things that they have saw in their case history and in other situations that has caused them to have to be reviewed. And that's never good because they're officers of the court. The mere fact that they took an oath and they swore to uphold the law and the integrity of the law is like a mockery when they have sat there and did what they have done to me and countless others in getting a name for themselves so that they could be thought something of. Then you have someone like Ms. Gardner who is out there paving the way, who is trying to do her level best to right the system and to correct it, being bombarded and pushed against the wall and fought against and meeting with all kind of pushback and blowback because she sees the injustice. She sees the wrong. And the moment she opened up her mouth to say something, then you have the same people trying to shut up because they know that if she continues on the path that she's going, and I'm believing God that she will, that as she continues on the path that she is going on, it's going to expose and uncover their deception, their corruption, and their coercion. And that's the problem, because we're looking back and we're not taking responsibility. Every human being has a responsibility to hold each one accountable. And that is why I believe that I need your listeners, the listeners, to really be passionate about this and go for it. If you have grandchildren, if you have a daughter, if you have a sister, a mother, there are women coming in here 70 and 80 years old. Do you hear me? There is a lady in here who has Alzheimer's and has been diagnosed with that. Didn't even know her husband. Thought someone was breaking in her house. She had a beer or two earlier that evening, but she has clearly medically in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's and have been there. And they convicted her because she shot the gun that should never have been left accessible to her. I'm sure her husband would never have left that gun at her disposal. But she somehow got it and shot him thinking he was an intruder, but it was her husband. That woman is sitting in prison. Make me understand that. Not to mention all the mentally disturbed individuals who they throw them here because our systems out there have shut down. And so now it has become a daycare of sorts. It is insanity. It is a legal straitjacket. It binds you in such a way that it almost stops you and thwarts your ability to be able to defend yourself. And if you should open up your mouth and say, I am innocent, you will hear more laughter than anyone being empathetic or sympathetic to your situation. But I won't stop. I will never cop to a plea. I will never take a deal to get out earlier if I confess to anything. I am 100% innocent. I will fight and sit it to my dying breath. I won't just stop saying it. I will go after it. And not only go after it, I was looking at the For Life series that's on and the things that this man was going through. And it was like living my life. It has been, I have been so vulnerable and so open in the last few weeks, because having to go back through this and live it is difficult in and of itself. And then having to go back into the closed environment that we're in and have to contain and bottle it back up and try to push it down so that it doesn't overtake you. I can't tell you the many people that have reached out to us that were either employed by the hospital or even in the police department themselves, and even in the sheriff department, that says they know of things, and you know, and so with them knowing and feeling uncomfortable and being concerned for obvious reasons, but they know. There's so many people that know that this was wrongly done,
and they were afraid to speak up. And this is a sad situation. And you mentioned vulnerability. There are so many people in prison that are in prison because they were vulnerable. You know, they were vulnerable to a situation that was facing, ready to bring them down. And Judy, you mentioned at one time you used to think when somebody went to prison they deserve this. I have heard this from so many prisoners that were like yourself. When they were out there doing well, they were agreeing with the government because they thought the government was right until it happened to them. And then we see these things happening. We see what the government is really about, the prosecutor, prosecutional misconduct.
I just want to piggyback off of what you guys are saying, because the problem is the reason the system is also set up to fail is because we have people that suffer from mental health issues. We have people
exactly.
that suffer from different health ailments. The fact that you said that lady has autism, mm-hmm. I mean, here's the problem. We know that they're sundowning if you are in the medical field. When that means that they are completely disoriented. They are not who they thought they were because they are not cognitive to what's going on in their surroundings. To incarcerate someone in that manner, to incarcerate people with mental health issues, a victim of domestic violence, things like that, as opposed to getting them the help they need, it's only because they're women of color. Because if she was a white woman, she would have never been put away. Never.
That's right.
At any point. And that's the problem that we're having. They
yes.
put away women of color. I work in the healthcare field. Do you know how many pregnant women are in the prison system? To think that they want to hire me to come in there because there are so many pregnant women in the system. This is
and
nothing but a form of genocide.
Away because
to get rid
of that. She was in solitary confinement when she delivered her baby, and she passed away in one of the prisons in this country. So I agree with what you're saying.
And there are
yes,
so many of them
and
here.
That's why I say we have to change this narrative. That's the reason I feel like God is using Judy as a vessel in order for us to be able to say it is time that we wake up. It is time that we realize that as a people, stop letting people tell you what you cannot do. Stop telling people, oh, well, you can't run for this political position because you don't have a master's degree. As long as I come from that community, as long as I understand that struggle, then I am very well suited to sit in that seat. Because at the end of the day, wherever I sit in Congress, I won't forget that struggle. I won't forget what it was like when my mother couldn't feed her children. I won't forget what it's like when I know my neighbor leaves her child at home because she can't afford daycare, but she can't afford to miss work in order to ensure that her children eat. I know what it's like to know when people are incarcerated, family members, friends, and falsely in prison, but because they don't have the money or the white privilege, then they can't get out, and they have to sit there, and their lives are taken. So many people are released after 30 years of life, and their life is gone, and they can never regain that. We have
That's
to
it.
Change the narrative.
Yes.
We have to, as a people.
Yes, and I think that this, Leona, and we're thankful for you because it's people such as yourself that's doing this, that's lending us the opportunity, the vehicle, to get our stories out there so that people can understand that this is a very real thing, that this is not something you read in a book, although it seems like a nightmare or a horrible story that you would never want to read your children. It is real. It is physical. It is tangible. It leaves a vile taste in your mouth, and at the end of the day, you can't find peace with it. And so I just encourage people to continue to support blogtalkradio.com because there are so many others beyond myself. Miss Leona is just a champion of people because she understands it, having living parts of it herself. Walking through this, it's not an easy process. Hearing the different attorneys that say, hey, you got a good case. Either they want a lot of money that you can't have, that you don't have, or you have the ones that says, we'll take your case if you do most of the work.
Exactly.
Well, if I can
and
do most of the work,
a lot of
I would represent
they,
myself.
They will scam you. And I want to say, I don't get the credit for this, Judy. I'm going to say I am a Christian, too. And
mm-hmm.
I believe that God is using me to
yes.
bring you on and bring others on to get the truth out. Because
mm-hmm.
people in this country that hate someone because of the pigmentation of their skin has to be very sick or evil. And I go back to Ephesians when I say this. When I go to Ephesians, and it says in one of the scriptures, it says, put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil.
Mm-hmm.
For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. And we have to remember that this is a spiritual warfare between God and Satan himself. And there
mm-hmm.
are people who are either followers of Satan or they are possessed by Satan to do
mm-hmm.
this evil, to have this kind of hatred. But when someone hates someone because of the pigmentation of their skin, then we know something is definitely wrong because that's not bringing love and compassion, understanding, mercy, and forgiveness. It's bringing more hatred. It's like a disease that's spreading.
Yes.
So
yes,
it's not me that's doing this on my own. This is God working through me as he's working through you, Judy, and others, unfortunately, that are suffering but doing
yes.
God's will even while they're in that situation.
Yes, and I and that is why we have to support people such as yourself, such as the Missouri Cure, Hedy Harden and Angelica Mueller and Mr. Brown and all the others. I'm an advisory member, board member on that particular publication as well. We have to support these vehicles that are lending the voice, that are putting a face to the injustice, because at the end of the day, it's not enough to sit around in our living rooms, in our basement, and in any other place and tell people, oh, by the way, did you know, or girl, isn't it a shame, but do nothing. The change begins with you. If you're sick of things being as they are, the change begins with you. One thing I was, if I was nothing anything else, is I was a tax-paying, voting, registered voter, and I made it my business to go to the polls every single opportunity they gave me. I never took it for granted. I never wanted to be the person that said, that's a shame they put that person in office. I cannot emphasize the need to show up, not just in your dialogue, but show up physically. Put your hand to the pen. Utilize the vehicle God gave you and get out there. The church is 100% responsible for making certain that we keep the presence of God known in every avenue. Now, we understand there is a time and a place for everything, but if nothing else, church is first a business. And so we have to remember that if we don't put the people in place, they will never represent our best interest and what we believe and have the morality we desire and create a world for our children, because I want my granddaughter and any other grandchildren that I may have in the future, I want them to be able to have the same opportunities, but more. I want them to excel. Right now, our daughter, Kimada Pickens, is in school, in college in Texas, and she is thriving and excelling, making the top of the dean list, has gotten presidential awards for her academic scores and just being an all-around outstanding young woman. She's working. She's about to start an internship this summer. She was just up here to see me. You can go onto my website, justiceforjudyp.com, and you can look at family pictures and the fact that she was just up here. You can also go to change.org and sign a petition. These are things that we can do that can help aid in not only my release, but in helping so many others. But you can see how she's thriving. She's a happy, well-rounded young woman. She has always, to the day, has maintained that the love for her family, the love for her mother, and our relationship, and how nothing was ever done to her. My daughter was traumatized, being snatched from my bosom of sorts, and being put into foster care for a moment, and having to go through that wicked environment. It's not wicked for all, because it does work for some. I don't ever want to lend that impression that all foster homes are horrible, because the one she was in was not. But the mere fact that she was taken from what her normality was and put into a situation like that was just depravity on the highest level. I can't even begin to imagine. I just know what it felt like for me to be sitting, laying on the floor in a filthy cell with about 60 other women, not knowing what these people were and people's waste and whatever else, trying to understand how this was happening. And all I could think about was my kids. All I could think about was my husband, my mother, my the church members, the congregation, all the people who we just prayed and we believed, and they protested, they picketed downtown. They, you know, when I went into court and was sentenced, they had me surrounded by, I want to say, of about 10 sheriffs, because they thought they were going to bum rush and try to, I guess, snatch me out of their arms or something. That's not these people, but that's the magnitude of the volume of people who support, believe, and know the truth, not to mention that there are people who were present who never got an opportunity to say their piece that want to, and we'll get that opportunity, because God has put it in my heart to go ahead on and finish writing this book, and I'm going to finish writing it, and also to do many other things that's going to lend way. I'm always looking for an opportunity to pursue law. It's just difficult in here, and I'm asking anyone that may know of a way that I can pursue the any aspect of the legal system, I will, because I want to be that face standing in front of that judge, standing alongside that prosecutor who can and hold them accountable. I want them to look at me and say, I want to be able to open my mouth and say, I was that person. I was the one that you're trying to railroad. I was that person. I know what it's like to sit behind bars for a crime you did not commit, screaming, somebody hear me and nobody's listening. I want to be able to tell that person that's sitting there on trial that you have a support, that you have somebody that's not going to rest until you're free. You have somebody that's going to help your family, because that's the part people forget too. When you incarcerate someone wrongfully or otherwise, you can incarcerate the family. The family is now incarcerated. They're limited. They're bound. My husband had his bouts of being up and down in a little bit of depression. Thank God he's not going through that now. But the devastation of his broken heart, the devastation of my mother who hasn't fully recovered, who I don't think could possibly be whole until I'm returned back. Not to mention the congregation and how, you know, I get letters and emails, Pastor Pickens, we're praying. Pastor Pickens, we love you. And then there is my bishop, Bishop Beulah B. Brandon, whom I love, my spiritual mother, who has been on working with my sister Brandy and my husband and helping to do whatever is necessary, pulling all any documentation she has, showing my character so that the people can see this. And it just speaks to how we have to do the unnecessary in order for the necessary to be done. And so I won't ever stop. Leone, you have a friend for certain. If you never had, you have a partner, you have somebody that's going to make sure that we keep on pushing it out. I am praying for you and your family member as well, because this cannot continue. Our black men need to know they are safe, that they can walk in their masculinity, that they can be the head as they've been called to be. They have been put as God priests in our homes, and whom better to teach your sons how to be a man than a man? Whom better to teach your daughter how to be a woman than her mother or her sister or her grandmother? We have got to stop this genocide that is happening, and I'm not going to rest until it is done. So I thank God for this opportunity. We are getting some good feedback. People are now taking notice, and they're like, oh, okay, we didn't know that this was happening, that this could even happen. They're taking notice, and not only are they taking notice, some people are beginning to reach out, and so we thank God for that. So I just wanted to tell you, Leone, that this vehicle that you have provided us with is beginning to, you know, bring people to the forefront, and we are redirecting them back to blogtalk.radio.com. I also was made aware of on yesterday that Mr. Tom Joyner is also pursuing the Munch High housing diagnosis. He is running some kind of a special. I don't know that to be true or not. Perhaps you all can look into that. But he's running a program where he's touching the Munchausen diagnosis as it relates to African-American women, how they have been wrongfully diagnosed, and not, most of them never even diagnosed, just given a label, and how they have been proven countless times over and over again how that has been false. He's also bringing in, shedding light to the fact that many of these people that go into courts and trials, they get these doctors that are more or less employed by the state, and they falsify and lie and exaggerate and bring say things that are not true, and then they've been found to be guilty, much like in a situation where I am concerned. The people that they deem bring forth by way of professional expert witnesses have been found to perjure themselves in countless cases as it relates.
I want to speak on that, really, because I just noticed that, too. And, again, they sometimes will either pay people to lie, or they will have them lie in some way. And I believe with monitors, you know, sometimes the DA is, I mean, most of the time, a lot of times, the district attorneys, the prosecutors, will bring in false witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the people that will testify on your behalf will be called in by the prosecutors until the last minute. Because as long as the prosecutor calls in these witnesses that are going to testify on your behalf, the lawyers, the defense lawyers, cannot call them in. So they will call them in, and at the very last minute, they will say they don't need these witnesses, and it's too late. A lot of times it's too late for the defense to call in the witnesses.
And that's, you know, because with our situation, they define Munchausen. They attempted to get Judy seen to state that she had Munchausen. We never gravitated towards Munchausen. The prosecuting team stated this was done because she has Munchausen. She was never diagnosed with it.
Not only was I not diagnosed with it, the doctor that they brought on there had said in the courtroom that he had seen me when it was a lie, and they would bring that out in the evidentiary hearing, that was, in fact, he was found to have been lying and perjured himself in the court of law. And then the judge, the same judge who tried me, said, well, it doesn't make a difference that he lied. Excuse me? It doesn't make a difference that he sat in this court and perjured himself. So everything that attached to what he said needs to be brought up under scrutiny. He lied from the word go. I have never been diagnosed. I have never been none of those things. And so I've never been accused
Explain
of
what
it.
That is. I don't even know. I've never even heard of it.
Munchausen is something that's now coming to the forefront, but it kind of almost rises in the sense it's on the back end of postpartum depression in a sense.
Okay.
What they basically are saying is that they're saying that women it mostly happens with the females, that they would intentionally, they take on this savior mentality. They will make themselves or their children ill and then come in and save them, kind of like save the day, so to seek attention. So it's an attention-getter type of a deal, and is what they were saying. And sometimes it goes to the point of death, that not being their intention, but it can lead that. That's just a watered-down version. By no means is it the textbook behind that, but there are steps and variables to that. There would be signs all along the way, all through life through that shows and lends to that, which was not the case. And they knew that. And when it was brought out and pointed out to them that it was wrong and that it was a lie, they didn't even correct the behavior. They just said, oh, well, it doesn't matter that he lied. It does matter. The moment you say anything in the court of law, whether you're telling the truth or not, and you represent the medical field or the law in any capacity, whatever that might be, a judge, a lawyer, an officer, a detective, whatever, people automatically associate that as to be truth. Anything that the newspaper or magazine or anyone says, they take it to be true because they figure it wouldn't be said if it wasn't true. When I'm here to tell you that about 70% of what you read is almost always exaggerated, loosely stated, or just a flat-out lie. You might have a hair of truth in there. Susie was a blonde. That might be the only truth that's in there. And they'll describe a person as being tall, dark, and handsome when he was short, fat, and ugly. I'm just using that as an exaggeration, but that's pretty much how off it gets, because it's thriving and lives off of sensationalism, about getting the periodicals sold, about getting the money coming in from you selling it. So it's a business before it's anything else, and sometimes at the compromise of someone's liberty and freedom. Now, I do have to get off the phone, but my husband, my godson, I love you, Brian. I love you, Kim. I love you, Carl, and Miss Leona. I want you all to continue on because she has this hour filled, but I just want to reiterate how people can help. If you want to be able to help me and help our family and the countless others, please go to justiceforjudypickens.com. Let me say this again, justiceforjudyp.com. That would be justice, the word justice, the number four, my name, Judy, and my last initial, P.com.
Judy, is type your name in the internet browser, Judy Pickens Petition, and it'll bring up everything you need to know about Judy. Pickens Petition. And Judy, we will have you on the show tomorrow morning, March 13th, Friday at 8 o'clock your time, 9 a.m. Eastern. It was an honor having you on with us again, and we look forward to tomorrow.
Oh, and thank you all so very much. But please, you all, continue on. I'm sure Ms. Leona would love to hear from Carl and the rest of you. And I thank you again. And anyone out there, call in today. Call in tomorrow. We could love to hear your voice. Thank you, Leona.
Thank you, Judy. You have a good day.
You too.
And Carl, the last time we had you on, you kind of broke when you were talking about it, going to work one morning with the family and coming home. And I don't want to have you break down again, but again, if you can talk a little bit about your feelings and what you went through, the family went through, we'd appreciate that.
Oh, shoot. Because it was, Judy had stated, I was unaware, but I fell into a state of depression during this time. And I guess, to be very honest, I guess about the past 5 years, I really came totally up out of it. You know, I worked for the system for many years. I worked for the courts. I worked for halfway houses. And so I'm too one of those people that believe what a person was convicted for, actually had some parts in it. I really did. And I used to have clients who used to always tell me stories, but I never believed them. And it's because of the picture that the system already presents to you, and we have a tendency of gravitating towards that concept that justice is justice. And going through our situation, I come to realize that's not always so. Because, again, Judy was convicted on circumstantial information. The only thing that we had to deal with was this bag that had came up off of Michael, which we inadvertently gave back to Michael's doctor, just so happened to disappear by the time when we was in trial, it came out that it went from my hands to the Michael's and Kimana's doctor's hands, who turned it over to security, who was to take it to another hospital to get it tested. It never made it to the other hospital. It never got there. It just vanished. Then come to realize the only reason why I gave the bag to her was because she told me at that time when she walked in the room with me with the bag that she can take it to an outside lab to get tested. So I'm trusting and believing her because she's a doctor and had a relationship with her for all these years. When we find out in trial, she was taking it to the sister hospital of the hospital that the kids were in. So it wasn't actually an outside lab.
This is how they deceive. I mean, it happened in my life. You know, they say they want to find this person because they want to help them. They know the person is seriously depressed. They know all these things that he innocent and everything. And then you try to help them because you think you're going to get help, and it turns out that you're being lied to and deceived. And I can see what you're talking about. I want to say real quickly before I forget too, Carl. Judy mentioned blogtalkradio.com. People can find anything that I do as just typing in Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light. Blog Talk Radio, and I meant to tell Judy that before she hung up. It's Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light, and they can find these interviews right on that on that station. It'll bring you to Blog Talk Radio, but it will bring you to the things that we talk about, shedding light.
Right. You're right, because I did that a couple of weeks ago and listened to some of the interviews of some people you had.
Yeah, it's Blog Talk Radio Shedding Light.
But yeah, it's been a nightmare. I can't say a dream. It's just been a nightmare, and it's like no matter ever since our son passed, we've never been able to totally grieve because we've gone from one thing to another thing to another thing to another thing, and like Judy was trying to say earlier, you know, Michael passed. He went in the hospital on a Monday. He passed on a Saturday. A week later, we were deprived of seeing Kimata in the hospital. Then we went to court for a whole year to get custodial of Kimata given to my mother because she was automatically placed into a foster home. And then 6 months after that, then they came after Judy. Then it took another year to even make it to trial because of the injustice we went through with the attorney who just attempted to get our money, who was personally going through some things, who was in the, highlighted in the paper. All of a sudden, when he dropped us, he's not in the paper anymore. And then we go through the trial, and we've been living this ever since.
And it's devastating. It's someone that's been through it. It is devastating because when you are doing so well, a normal family, a Christian family, doing so well, and then all of a sudden, because of deception and lies on behalf of others, this is what I'm going to say. Others will lie and they will come out like they're the perfect ones. They're the Christians. They're the honest ones. When in fact, it's God's people that are being persecuted. And this is what happens a lot of times. They over exaggerate. They blow things out of proportion. They lie. They tamper with evidence. These are all the things that people don't realize. This is what's happening in a lot of these cases. You can be from a natural.
And a lot of people. Yeah. And with Judy was. And the more they portrayed her, they never portrayed her coming from that it was a husband and a wife in this home. It was portrayed as though this was a single mother struggling with three kids.
That's so what they do.
This is why the Munchausen. They not you because when you start reading her articles from the World to the Post-Dispatch to the Riverfront Times, this was all of the media paper that the story was in all the way up to this trial. And you will not see me. You only saw me mentioned in the papers one time, and it was the last line. Who reads a paper, newspaper story and go to the last line?
Mm-mm.
Husband Carl Pickens not found guilty. That was one time in the multiple newspaper articles that she was in here. But when a person would read it, they thought they were reading, and this is what a single African-American mother of three did.
This is what they do. This is exactly what this is what the media does. And the media, this is why, as much as I do not care for our national leader, he's right about one thing. Sometimes, in most cases, the media is fake news when they come and do those kind of things for whatever reasons. These are mostly young people anyway that are in the media, and it's almost as though they're taking sides. And I remember years ago as a child growing up, when they reported news, but they didn't put in their opinions, their own theories, their own, you know. And this is what happens in this day and age today. People who are
and
trying to defend
what, you know what, Leona? And since you've contacted Judy, we were going and looking at some of the articles just so we can have some stuff. I was interviewed by the Riverfront Times one time. When I Googled and researched trying to find that article, I could not find that article. All I could find was everything that was persecuted towards Judy. But the one article where I gave her an opinion that I know I did, that I read, is no longer out there.
And I agree with you because that's happened with me. There was two or three articles. I've been trying to find them. Can't find them anywhere. They were all positive. They were all positive.
Thank you.
They managed to.
Right. I know what I did. I know what I said. I know what I read. It's not there now.
Mysteriously disappears. But, Carl, I want to say real quickly, we got about 50 seconds left. We are going to be on tomorrow. We won't have Judy on the whole time with us, so we'll pick up on this when we have the show tomorrow morning. And I believe it's Judy's, is it Brian still on with us?
No,
is it Brian that was
gone.
On with us?
Yeah, Brian was on.
Yes, I am.
Okay, Brian, tomorrow, we're going to be on again tomorrow if you can come on. I'm sorry that we didn't have you anymore. But tomorrow morning, and again, Carl, thank you so much. I appreciate both of you being on, and we'll pick
Carl,
up on
I
this.
Carl, I love you too, bro.
No problem. Love you, Brian.
Okay.
I'll go ahead, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you so much. That's what this show is all about. You know, it's about bringing out
my family. I love it.
It's about bringing out the truth, and it's about bringing out real people, because we
yes,
are living
ma'am.
In a society today where we are surrounded by so many ungodly people, so many people that judge without knowing all the facts, so many people that don't want to do anything about it because think others are doing something about it. So we'll pick up on this tomorrow. Again, thank you so much, Carl, for being on with us.
Amen.
Brian, thank you so much,
all
and
right,
we look
Diana.
Forward to it tomorrow.
Thank you. God bless you, Carl.
Thank you. Stay blessed.
We
all right.
Going to be signing off now. Thank you, audience, for being on with us. And again, tomorrow morning, Friday, March 13th, from 8 a.m. Central and 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much.